Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Getaway Friday, October the 8th, 2021, 17 minutes past the hour. We have got so much to talk about today, but we're going to kick it off in a fun way. Marla Gibbs, legendary actress from The Jeffersons and 227 and so many movies you have watched over the years, Meteor Man, Grantham and Rose. She has done so much, guest starred on The Uglies and just finished up a stint on Days of Our Lives, turned 90 years old this past July. She's always been a friend to this program, and here's an interview with Marla Gibbs to kick off the program today.
This is Scott Spears, and today we're joined by one of my all-time favorite guests. In the 20-year history of this program, she's joined us many times, and she is always a delight. She's one of the most gracious people I have ever met, and recently, this past June, she celebrated a seminal birthday, 30 years old, and we'll talk more about that as the interview goes on. You know her best as Florence the Maid on The Jeffersons and Mary on 227 and so many other great roles over the years, and she is still going strong. The one and only Marla Gibbs. Marla, how are you?
I'm fine, Scott.
It's always good to speak with you. How was the birthday this past June?
It was great. It was fantastic.
Now,
my children put it together, and we ended up with 100 extra guests at the restaurant we were at. So.
Now, Marla, I know it was your 30th birthday. Tell people the significance of 30 in your life.
Okay, the significance of 30 is no matter what your age, because we're spiritual people as well as physical people, we really don't have any age or time. So I choose to vibrate on 30 because at 30, people don't think about it. It's too late or it's almost too late or, oh, it's over. They think about what they want to do and they do it. So at 30, I'm thinking about what I want to do and I'm doing it.
When a lot of people made notice of your birthday because of the year, when you saw that year printed, 90, did that mean anything to you?
No, because I'm 30, it can't mean anything to me, other than it's the number for this planet. As long as I'm on this planet, they're going to count it the way they count it, and I will just ignore them and count it the way I count it.
Now, Marla, this past summer, on July the 20th, you were awarded with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. What was that like?
That was fantastic. I mean, I received so much love on that day that it overwhelmed me, and I fell silent for a few minutes, and which caused a lot of problems.
What?
Because I felt a little dizzy, I just stopped talking and held on to the podium, waiting for it to pass, but everybody didn't wait for it to pass. They jumped up and got me, and they said, "Are you all right?" I said, "Yes," but they talked me into going next door in the building, and they had the paramedics, and they checked me out and said I was okay, so I came back outside and finished the event and took pictures with the star, but a couple of my daughter's friends felt that I must have had a mini stroke. So they worried her to death, and she talked to me, and she was so upset that I decided, yes, I'll go check it out. So I went to the hospital to see if there was anything, if I had had a stroke, which I knew I didn't, but I went to check it anyway. And because my pressure was a little high, they talked me into staying overnight, and when I got upstairs, they talked me into staying the weekend because my potassium was low. So one thing led to another. We ended up with a colonoscopy, and I discovered I had a mass on my colon. so they end up having to cut out part of the colon with the mass on it. And after that, everything was fine. So I had been losing weight for a year. I had lost over 30 pounds and couldn't seem to put it back on. So most of the physicians I visited, nobody could figure out what was going on. But so when I did that and found out that I had a mass, we finally figured that's what was eating up all my food. Somebody in a mass was eating the food that I was trying to get. So anyway, they discovered that the mass was intact, had never opened or leaked. So whatever cancer was in that mass, so it didn't get me. So they checked my body. I had no cancer. I came home, and now I'm working on putting the weight back on again.
Hmm. So there was cancer in the mass, but it never spread.
Right.
That's wonderful to hear.
Yes, it is.
When you think about that, that you were at the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and because people thought you had a stroke, which you did not, you ended up checking into the hospital and finding this issue, which had been bothering you for some time. Is that just coincidence to you, or maybe a divine intervention?
I think it's divine. I think that's the way God works, in mysterious ways.
How has the recovery from that been?
It's been wonderful. So I had a movie to do with Snoop Dogg on the 27th, and we were able to do that movie.
Oh, that's great. How was that getting back to work?
Oh, great, great.
Now, the movie with Snoop Dogg, what do you play in that movie?
I play his grandmother, and I only worked a day on it, but it was just great to work with Snoop.
What is he like? A lot of people have kind of preconceived notions about him.
Well, I tell you, he's wonderful. He is so kind and generous. He has put a shout out to me over the year. He's done 2 or 3 shouts out to me, maybe 4. But we had never met. So we finally met, and we both hugged each other. And we did our scene, and then he sent me some flowers to thank me for being in the movie. I think he's also producing the movie. So it was just wonderful. And everybody I talked to who has worked with him say the same thing. He's very kind, and he's wonderful to work with.
Over the years, he's gotten so tied in with the marijuana issue. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, our movie was about that, too. As a matter of fact, I was the one who brought the marijuana in. Knew all the names of all the marijuana. And who sat down and smoked it with him.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now,
it is California, and it is legal.
That's right. Now, is that something Marla Gibbs believes or supports?
Oh, yes. I used to have a jazz supper club, as you know, and I had a lot of musicians, and they explained their position on it, and I understood. It's an herb. It never should have been illegal. And so finally they recognized that, and they've made it legal.
You know, Marla, the last time we spoke, you went in depth on a couple of health issues you've had over the years involving aneurysms. Has that ever been something you've used to recover being legal in California?
Oh, no. No, because I was the one preaching against it when I was growing up. All the boys in the neighborhood steered clear of me because I was giving lectures. So they would be laughing if they saw me now.
What do you think people will think when they see you in this role as Snoop's grandmother with the marijuana?
I don't know, because people have so many diverse thoughts. You never know what they're going to think or what they're going to say. You just have to do what you're going to do, and that'd be it.
Is there something you look for in a part at this point in your career when something comes across your desk that you say, I'm going to do that, I wouldn't do that?
Sometimes I say, I don't believe it, I don't want to do it, and my agent says, fine.
Is there anything coming up in the future?
There's always something coming up in the future, but like most people, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
She is coming.
Well, that's true. Now, has there ever been a period where you did not work? You have always seemed to be around, which is a great thing.
Yeah, but I kind of don't remember where it is now. I went to one audition, and one of the producers said, do you know how much you've been working lately? He said, you've been working all over the place. I said, thank you, Jesus. And they said, okay.
How has working figured into your life? What does it mean to you to act?
It means a lot to me to be available and to be of service and to work in whatever I'm working at. When I worked at United Airlines, I felt the same way. And now, of course, that I'm doing in the movie industry, you get to play so many different roles that are like you and are not like you. You get to explore life and other people's perspectives. And it gives you a better understanding about everything.
What is the greatest thing you've learned through your acting roles?
That really, it's true that we are all one. We're all the same. If you doubt that, then just need a kidney or a heart transplant, and a person of color can give it to you and save your life because their parts are the same as yours.
You know, Marlo, there's so much talk these days about racism and race in the news. Have you ever felt that in your career? Have you ever felt that it impacted your career in any way?
Not in my career, no.
In your personal life, was there an issue?
Oh, yeah. When I became 18 and started to go look for work, and those days they could tell you I didn't sound black, so they... When I asked them, were they considering Negroes for the application, they said, are you? And I said, yes, I was. They said, oh, we're sorry, we're not considering Negroes at this time. Or I'd stand in line for 2 hours, and by the time they got to me, I wasn't considered. So that was quite a shock, because I never thought about it. Mm. I grew up in a black neighborhood, and in a black neighborhood, a lot of the stores are black. You don't see any difference. The only people who look like minorities are white people or Jewish people, because they had stores, and we shopped in their stores, but we also had our own stores in my neighborhood in Chicago. So I never thought about racism. As a matter of fact, if we were at the beach and they brought some white kids along and one of the black kids tried to be nasty to them, I would feel sorry for them. And I felt like they were not in power, we were in power, we should not be doing that.
You know, Marla, in the entertainment industry, a lot of people talk about the money when it comes to race issues, I guess. Do you think the pay was right, what you were getting?
It's not as much. It was more than I had before, so I accepted it. But I knew it was not the same as the others were getting. But if I liked the work was its own reward, I thought. That's the way I felt. I was new to this industry, so I really didn't know how things work. I only knew how I felt and what I wanted.
When you were on the Jeffersons, wasn't there a time when you led the group to get a raise?
Oh, yeah. Because I was the last one on the totem pole, I didn't think I should be getting more than the others who were there before me and regulars. So if it looked like they were not getting enough as much as me, then I would ask them, how much did you get? I think you should get more. So we organized and we set up a meeting. Of course, they were afraid to go at first, but I said we'll do it in alphabetical order, and no one will know who started it. So we did that, and which resulted in them getting some more money, but also resulted in us never getting a meeting again.
You know, Marla, when you were on 227 and you were the lead in that show, did things get any better?
Oh, yeah, because I got to do a lot.
Now, you were highly involved in 227 from beginning to end.
Well, it was a project that came off the play we were doing, and I'm the one that sold it to them. But still, I didn't get the credit or the money. But I got the right, all rights, courtesies, and privileges. But that doesn't mean anything if it doesn't translate to money. But I didn't think about that. I wanted to do the work. So I was able to write about four shows and also to make decisions. So I fought for the people I wanted. I fought for Hal, my husband. I fought for Jack A. She came and did a dynamite performance. And I knew nobody was going to come in better than her, so I said, that's her. And they said, well, the network wants, they named another actress that I knew and I liked very much, but she wasn't right for the project. I figured Jack A was it. And of course, all these years later, she's proven me right.
And that's absolutely true. And people who are watching Days of Our Lives have seen you two reunited in recent times.
Yes. So we've worked together three or four times. I've been her mother on this project, and I was her mother on First Family.
What was that like to work with her again on the soap opera?
It was great.
Do you like working on soap operas?
I do. I worked on Passions first.
Is this something that might be a reoccurring role for you?
Possible, but I'm not the one to ask.
Had that been taped before the Hollywood Walk of Fame or after?
That was taped before.
Before? When you look at this career, Marla, you talked a little bit about the money there on 227, that you got the rights and privileges, but not the money. Why do you think that was? 227 was a top 10 show.
Well, you don't know that when you're first starting, and neither do they. So they're still trying to put all the old things in place that they're used to doing. And I understood that. But at the same time, I understood that I brought you this project, and I should be able to. All I wanted to do is just be a producer, so they would talk to me. I didn't want to be exec producer. I wasn't thinking about that. But when they didn't want to give me the producer, now I thought about being an exec producer or not doing it. So they ended up giving me the all rights, courtesies, and privileges. But they didn't think I was going to act on it, but I did. I have many things to be thankful for. I have Regina King, who was in the play with me, and I fought for her to be our daughter. I asked for Helen Martin, but I didn't have to fight for her. They agreed right away. I asked for Hal Williams, and I asked for Jack Kay. And people loved him. People loved Jack Kay. They loved Hal Williams. Lester, but he decided to move out of L.A. to Palm Springs or Palm Desert. Then he moved to Hawaii. So things just kind of started falling apart.
Regina King has been such a success story, Academy Award winner. Would you have thought that when you hired her on 227?
I knew she had the qualities because I was in the play with her, and she was a little girl, and she was awesome. In the play, she wasn't my daughter. She was a little girl down the street who got on my nerves. And the one who played my daughter has now become a writer for TV and film. She wrote Love Jack Country, Lovecraft Country. She was up for an Oscar for writing that, her and her partner, as she worked on NCIS. So I was fighting to get her on the show. She did do a scene on 227. And she was very good, but she was a little too old by the time we got to do the TV show. They wanted someone younger, so that's why we went to Regina. And then I had to fight for Regina, because they didn't know who she was, of course. But she turned out to be the best thing.
You know, Marla, a lot of people at the time, you were doing The Jeffersons, and the last season of The Jeffersons was the 84-85 season, and 227 started in 85. I don't think people knew that The Jeffersons was going to be canceled in 85. How did it happen that in 3 months...
We didn't know.
Yeah.
We were upset because we didn't know either.
Yeah.
We found out by people calling us, telling us they heard it was canceled.
How were you able to go from one series to another in prime time in 3 months? Did they already have 227 ready to go?
Yes. We knew that the Jeffersons had another season, so we shot it and said we would take second place and come in the year after. But they suddenly canceled it, so we were ready to go.
When you started to tape episodes of 227 before the public saw them, did you know you had a hit? Did you say, this is going to work?
I felt it was going to work because we ran it as a play, and for 1 month it ran for 6 months, and then we had to keep putting it back up. So we had some other shows that were scheduled to come in, but we had to postpone them and put 227 back up. In the meantime, Scully Mitchell brought Brandon Tartikoff down to see the play, and he liked it. And Columbia, I'm trying to think of the name of the baseball player's son. Anyway, he was over at Columbia, so he wanted us to go with Columbia, and I was talking to Columbia, but they did not want to hire Christine Houston, who wrote the play and was responsible for it. They didn't want to give her a job as one of the writers. And as a matter of fact, the man told me, I work alone. So I said, well, he can work alone, but he won't be working on 227. So in the meantime, I'm on the lot, and Norman Lear passes me. He says, I hear you have a dynamite show. I said, I do. He said, well, I want to see it. I said, well, I had invited him first, and he didn't respond. And I said, well, you better come tomorrow because we're closing. So he said, well, call my office. So I did, and they came, and they had to sit way in the back because we were full. And then at the end, he says, so what are you doing with this? Have you signed anything? I said, well, I'm talking to Columbia. He said, have you signed anything? I said, no. They haven't got around to talking about any money. So he said, well, call my office. So I did, and we put it together, and we disagreed on some things. So I end up saying I want to be exec producer now to my attorney, who then told them, and then he told me, I can get you all rights, courtesies, and privileges, but you're not going to get the credit. So I said, okay, as long as I can do the work. So I ended up sitting in on editing and doing a lot of things because I'm a fast study. I was able to go to editing and still do my part on the show. which they thought was amazing. And of course, I pay attention to all the actors, everybody, all their lines, how they work, what works, what doesn't work, and nobody knows that I'm paying attention to all this. I pay attention to the set decorators. We had an event, I think it was my parents, what do they call it? One of my favorite actresses, Bea Richards, played my mother. The anniversary, it was an anniversary party. And the set decorator had all the gifts in the same kind of wrapping. I said, do you think all these people went to the same store? So they changed it. But I paid attention to everything, the sound, the lights, everything.
You know,
as a matter of fact, something happened that I always hated, but nobody else thought about. Anytime we're coming out of the room into another room, they stop and reset. If we come out the door, we got to go back in. So they reset the camera to catch us coming out the door. I said, we got four cameras. Why can't one? Nobody's working on. They finished over in the room. Why can't this man pull up and be ready to catch us coming out the door? So they started doing that, and of course, I think it saved a lot of money and a lot of time. And as actors, we didn't have to. Whatever the momentum we were feeling was, we came out the door. We'd come out the door with it, you know. But anyway, I felt those are some things that I added. I tried to do that on First Family, but he didn't understand what I was saying. He thought I was saying we needed another camera. We don't need another camera. This man's standing over here doing nothing, waiting for another scene down the line, you know?
Mm. You know, Marla, at one point, in your career, really the only point that you were ever in the tabloids a lot was your, they called it a feud with you and Jack A.
We never had a feud. I understood Jack A. Jack A wanted to be a star. She had been waiting to come out. She came out of New York, and I understand I was talking to Elena, who played Rose on the show. When she was doing something, Jack A was dressing them. So now she's in a position to be something. She wanted to be a star. My feeling was all the stars are in the sky. So we're working or we're not working. That's the way I feel. You're either a working actor or you're not, unemployed actor. So if you're working, you should be happy. If you get some awards, that's wonderful. But the real reward is doing the work. That's the way I felt. So Jack A didn't understand that, and I forgot how many people now, but anyway, there was Hal and I, and then, of course, there was Elena, that was three, and Jack A came in after that, where she wanted to move up next to me, and they wanted her next to me, but I didn't, because the way we work is so different. Jack A can do what she does by herself. She can do it with one actor. She can do it with a group. She doesn't really need me. You understand?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would never do it. I said, our rhythms are too different. They won't work. I said, and the way she's doing it, I said, people would wonder, why do I let her in the house? I said, so I don't let her in the house. She gets in because Rose brings her. So why would I let somebody in the house that I'm arguing with all the time? So it didn't make sense to me. So we never did it. But I'm sure she had an agent or somebody who was trying to push for what she wanted. And I'm sure they felt like I was afraid to let her, well, I wanted her to do whatever she wanted to do. She was very funny. She made me laugh. She made me break scenes plenty of times. I just stopped and said, wait, I have to get out of my system because she's funny. She didn't understand. But since then, we were doing First Family. She came in to makeup and she said, I want to say that I'm sorry how I acted. She said, I was selfish.
Hmm.
And I said, because I forgave her a long time ago. And when she went off to do her own show, they only gave her one. And I thought that was unfair because in order for your show to be successful, you have to do at least four so people can find you at least, you know. So they only gave her one, and then they came back and said, Jackie wants to come back to the show. I said, fine. They said, it's all right with you. I said, I cannot tell anybody on this show that they cannot come back to this show. Everybody on this show is responsible for the success of the show. And Jackie is responsible for the success of the show. And yes, she can come back. I said, you just need to talk to her because it's not a problem for me. So she came back and we went on. But she realized later that she was isolating herself. We were not isolating her. When she got the Emmy, they never told us where they were going to celebrate or anything. I was asking everybody, do you know where the party is? They said, no. So we were not invited.
Hmm.
So we didn't come because we couldn't come. But I had bought flowers for her, and she was leaving the rehearsal hall, and the flowers hadn't got there. But they came a few minutes later, and they told me they caught her before she got out the gate and gave her the flowers. So the next day I asked her if she got the flowers. She said, yes. So I don't know what the conversation was about that. But things kept going. And then she thought because my daughter had auditioned for the same role she did, that I probably wanted my daughter and didn't want her. But I only wanted her because she was right.
Well, a lot of people, when that's going on, when you're reading in the tabloids or seeing it on the supermarket stand or there's chatter, even if it's not true that there was this tension on the set, what do you think? I mean, you're a part of it at that time. Where do you make that comes from?
I don't know. I really didn't pay that much attention to it, and I didn't read it on the tabloids. And when people ask me, I just tell them no.
The last year 227 was on, Jack A did leave for a minute to go do her own television series, but a lot of new characters, Paul Winfield and Barry Sobel, and did you feel after 4 years it was time to change it up a little bit?
No, I didn't. I wasn't a part of them changing it. When they brought Barry Sobel in, Barry was famous for imitating a rapper. And that's what he wanted to do. They brought him, they let him, wouldn't let him do anything that he wanted to do. And so I had to fight for him. He wouldn't come out of his dressing room one time, and I went to the door and I said, who loves you? He said, I was going to come out. I said, okay, come on. And then I went in there and I said, now you didn't want him. Now he's my son, so leave him alone. He belongs to me.
The great Paul Winfield joined the cast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now that was nice. Paul was a Gemini like me.
How did 227 come to an end?
They just told us they were not picking it up next year. We thought we had another year. We didn't. So by that time, some of the actors' reactions, I have to blame the actors, too. Some of their reactions were not good. And I guess the network got sick. As a matter of fact, they sent me a message that if I wanted to get rid of everybody, I could. I said, I can't do that. They want me to be exec producer. So now, don't give me all the exec producer problems. If you all don't want them on the show, you tell them.
That's interesting. What do you think happened with the actors?
I don't know. They did, had ego problems, didn't like a line. Of course, nobody ever knew that I was supposed to be exec producer. Nobody ever told anybody, including the people who were on staff. They didn't know why I was doing the things I was doing. Nobody ever said to them I was supposed to be exec producer. And they never told the actors that. And I never told the actors that because I felt like that would be an ego thing. I never told Jack A. that I hired her. I just let her do what she wanted to do. I just didn't let her mess with anybody else. She couldn't step on Elena's lines or interfere with Elena's lines. So I had all the house, and we sat down and I explained it all to them. I said, we have contracts, so we treat everybody, anybody that comes on this show as a guest, we help them. Because we have a contract, and they don't. So we help them do what they're trying to do. So, because now the producers told me they didn't have time to deal with. So then when I had the meeting, they wanted to come to me. I said, no, you told me you didn't have time. So no, you're not invited.
You know, Marla, you might have the record, and maybe you can answer this. You were on The Jeffersons for 11 years, hit show, went right into 227, 5 years, a hit show. You had 16 years of continuous hit primetime television series, and then never had another regular role on a primetime.
Well, we did have the Hughleys. I played
the Hughleys, yeah.
Hughley's mother for 4 years, and he decided not to do the fifth year.
But did they come to you after 227 and say, we want you to do another series? I would think that would be a given.
Oh, no. They didn't think about it. D.L. had come to my restaurant years before as a comedian, and I didn't allow cursing, and I didn't allow certain things to be said on the stage because most of my audience were older, and they didn't like that. So when D.L. came, he was on the stage and he said some things, and everybody immediately started looking for me. And so I went on the stage and clapped and said, that was wonderful, and took him off the stage. I said, now, young man, you come back when you have some clean material. So later he said, I couldn't come back because I didn't have no clean material. But, he wanted me to be his mother. So I got the call to come in to do his show. My manager told me, he said, you remember? I said, no, I don't remember. He said, you took him off the stage. I said, I did. I said, well, at least he wasn't mad. So he said I reminded him of his mother, so he wanted me to be his mother on the Hughleys. So that's how I got that role for 4 years.
Marla, at this point in your career, there are a lot of people in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, in the middle of this country, who feel like you're a member of the family. Would you ever, at this point, tour with a show or do a stage show, Broadway, something of that nature?
Oh, sure. If I liked the part and somebody offered it to me.
One thing that's interesting, we have about 5 minutes left here with the wonderful Marla Gibbs. Marla, the Jeffersons had an iconic theme song, and then 227 has a theme song that has become very popular. You sang the theme song. Do you like that song, and how did that come about that you would sing that?
They asked me to sing it, and I'm sorry I can't remember the writer's name, because I'm not responsible for the song. People think I wrote it, but I didn't. And I got to get his name so I can correct him with the proper name.
Did you like the song?
I like the song.
Yeah, it's a great theme song.
It is.
It really is. Do you...
Just like singing the Jeffersons, people sing that to me when.
Well, and you have a.
Especially the end. I mean, No Place Child.
That's a word that has got associated with you, child. Is that just the way Marla Gibb speaks?
Sometimes. Well, my neighborhood when I grew up, there was a lot of child. People say child a lot.
You know, Marla. One thing that I don't think you get enough credit for is your singing. You really are a great singer. You released a CD a few years ago. It's Never Too Late. It's a great CD. There's a video online on YouTube, a music video. People should check it out, Marla Gibbs. It's Never Too Late. Do you still like to sing?
I do. That was my first love. But I was shy. I know it doesn't seem like it because, as Florence, I'm not shy, but Marla is shy. And when you're singing, I always think that you're asking people to take you. So if they don't like you, it really hurts. But when you're acting, if they don't like you, it doesn't matter because they're not talking about you, they're talking about the character. And most of my singing has never been free. I tend to want to do it just the way the artist did it. So if I'm doing a Dinah Washington song, I'll do it the way Dinah did it. I don't have my own version. And my little great-granddaughter, she's singing at 15, and she's free. She just puts her own thing into it, and it's just marvelous. And I wish I had that kind of freedom, but I never did because I didn't grow up that way.
What's something we don't know about Marla Gibbs? You've been with us now for nearly a half century on television. What don't we know about the person?
Well, I'm writing a book, and it'll be out soon, and you'll be able to read it. I can't tell you here because there's too much to tell.
So there are things in the book that we wouldn't expect?
Right.
Oh, that's very interesting. Do you have a title for the book yet?
It's Never Too Late.
It's Never Too Late. That's perfect. Well, maybe you'll get to tour the country with a book signing.
Maybe so.
That would be wonderful. Marla, I want to tell the audience this before we let Marla go, and this will not be the last time she's on the show, because when this book comes out, we'll want to have her back. But when you're doing a show like this, the worst part is the booking, no doubt about it. And we've had a lot of great guests over the last 20 years. But Marla Gibbs has been so accommodating, so friendly, so hospitable. I know she doesn't believe in stars and things of that nature, but people know the name Marla Gibbs. And when you put her on your show, people tune in, and that's good for everybody. And you have, this is the person. There is no air with Marla Gibbs. And that, Marla, you've been a pal, and I'll never be able to pay you back.
Oh, thank you.
You are one of the best people that I know. I thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Marla, before we part ways, we've got about 30 seconds here. Can you sing a little line of something for us? Maybe just a little 227 or Jefferson's or whatever you'd like.
As long as you breathe, you'd better believe it's never too late for life. So drop all your fear, cause as long as you're here, it's never too late for life. Dream your dreams, scheme your schemes, living your life is the way. You cannot borrow from tomorrow, you only get one day. So don't give me the blues, just hear my good news, it's never too late for life. Being bold and stick to your goal. Forget all that stress and strife. Just keep the faith and trust your heart. But use your head, cause that's being smart. It's never too late for life. And with some help from above, lots of help from above, it's never too late for love.
The one and only Marla Gibbs. Marla, I love you. Stay well, and until next time.
You too. Stay safe, And keep looking like the Lone Ranger, Scott.
Thank you, Marla. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The one and only Marla Gibbs. What a way to start the morning. We'll be back in 15 minutes. Lots to talk about. Don't go away.
Yeah. To interview her there. And she is as slick an announcer as I ever saw it. I mean, designer. She's probably one of the best designers.